The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades, in the intellectual wilderness of South Lauderdale, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday. It is day one of the public hearing section of the Donald Trump impeachment inquiry. And we are going to, you know what, they're still in the middle of the questioning, so we're going to get right back to it. We are going to carry it live. Of course, I'm sure I'll break in with some snarky comments every now and then. But for now, well, let's listen. Uh-oh, I got to get the audio up. I lost my audio. Hold on, let me figure this out. I muted it to play the intro. And I see how speech, I can unmute it. Here we go.
Assembly, all right. Religion, free, fair, and open elections.
This is Congressman Denny Heck of Washington State.
Mr. Kent,
asking the question.
When American leaders ask foreign governments to investigate their potential rivals, doesn't that make it harder for us to advocate on behalf of those democratic values?
I believe it makes it more difficult for our diplomatic representatives overseas to carry out those policy goals, yes.
How is that, sir?
Well, there's an issue of credibility. They hear diplomats on the ground saying one thing, and they hear other U.S. leaders saying something else.
Ambassador Taylor, would you agree with that, sir?
I would.
Is there anything you'd like to add about how it might make it more difficult for you to do your job, sir?
Our credibility is based on a respect for the United States. And if we damage that respect, then it hurts our credibility and makes it more difficult for us to do our jobs.
Anyone looking at the facts can see what happened was an abuse of power. Anyone looking at the facts can see that what happened was unethical.
True.
Anyone looking at the facts can see. Anyone looking at the facts can see that what went on was just plain wrong.
Yes.
I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Jordan.
So they're in the section now where everybody gets 5 minutes. The Republicans, for the most part, are turning their questioning over to Jim Jordan, who is up now.
Hard-earned tax dollars of the American people to Ukraine. We're not talking to any country. We're talking Ukraine. Ernst & Young said one of the three most corrupt countries on the planet. Our witness on Friday, she testified.
And you're one of the three most corrupt humans on the planet. Go figure.
It's the system. So our president said, time out. Time out. Let's check out this new guy.
That's not what happened at all. This is such bullshit.
April, whose party took power in July. Let's see if he's legitimate.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, as has already been discussed, in 2018, President Trump had already done more for Ukraine than Obama did. That's right. President Trump, who doesn't like foreign aid, who wanted European countries to do more. Who knew how corrupt Ukraine was, did more than Obama.
So while he's rambling on, let me just tell you what happened with this guy, Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan does not sit on the House Intelligence Committee. It's the House Intelligence Committee who's overseeing these hearings. They're doing all the questioning. Because for some reason, the Republicans think this guy is their heavy hitter. They kicked someone else off the committee to put him on so he could do these questions? Are you kidding me? I don't think so. All right. What's he going to go off on now? We'll see.
Not one of those interactions, not one, were security assistance dollars linked to investigating Burisma or Biden.
No, just in what Donald Trump asked the president of Ukraine to do.
U.S. Senators, Ambassador Bolton, Vice President Pence, all became convinced that Zelensky was, in fact, worth the risk. He was, in fact,
legit and a real deal and a real change.
They told the president, he's a reformer.
It just happened after all the evidence came out of him trying to extort the president of Ukraine.
Over the next few weeks, We're going to have more witnesses like we've had today that the Democrats will parade in here, and they're all going to say this. So-and-so said such to so-and-so, and therefore we got to impeach the president.
Well, we
do. We can get more specific. We covered this a little bit ago. They'll say something like Ambassador Sondland said in his deposition, where he said, Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmouth
September
1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. And if you can follow that, that's the Democrats' plan and why they want to impeach the president.
Okay.
That's what we're going to hear over the next couple weeks.
Lies.
That's what we're going to hear. But no matter what they do, no matter how many witnesses they bring in here, four facts will not change.
Yep.
Have not changed, will never
right.
change.
Right. Donald Trump is an extortionist who tried to bribe the president of Ukraine in order to get the military aid that Congress had already allocated for them.
Pressure, there was no pushing.
Bullshit.
Ukrainians didn't even know the aid was withheld at the time.
Oh, but they were finding out.
And most importantly, as has been pointed out, the Ukrainians didn't take any specific action relative to investigations.
Doesn't matter.
To get
the fact that you tried is the crime. It doesn't matter. If you try to rob a bank, it doesn't matter if you get the money or not. The fact that you tried to do the holdup in the first place is the crime.
Nope.
God.
435 members of Congress. Only one gets to know who that person is. Only one member of Congress has a staff that gets to talk to that person.
Nonsense.
The rest of us don't. Only Chairman Schiff
and
knows who the whistleblower
Schiff
is.
Schiff already said he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. And it just doesn't matter.
Hand, swear to tell the truth and
look
nothing
at Schiff.
But we'll never get that chance. More importantly, the American people won't get that chance. This anonymous so-called whistleblower with
it doesn't
no
matter.
First-hand knowledge who's biased against
doesn't
the
matter.
President who worked with
the only Biden, reason the whistleblower is relevant is because the whistleblower who is besides the point, brought up the fact that there was something untoward going on with regard to the president holding up aid to Ukraine for personal political reasons. The whistleblower raised the concerns. There was an investigation which found, lo and behold, there was just cause there for an investigation because they're corrupt as hell. The whistleblower is immaterial at this point because they have actual witnesses who were on the call. Here we are. Based on this. You're damn straight.
The American people see through all this.
We see through
they
you.
Understand the facts support the president.
Gymnasium
they understand
Jordan.
This process is unfair, and they see through the whole darn sham.
We see through that your sham. Good. It's about time.
Mr. Welch.
Peter Welch from Vermont.
Thank you. I say to my colleague, I'd be glad to have the person who started it all come in and testify. President Trump is
yes,
welcome
exactly.
To take a seat right there.
Awesome. Good one.
You know, the question here is not a dispute about the enormous power that a president has. The question is whether, in this case, there was an abuse of that power.
Mm-hmm.
A president can fire an ambassador.
Yep.
For any reason whatsoever. A president can change his policy, as he did when he opened the door for Turkey to go in and invade Kurdistan, despite opposition from many of his senior advisors.
And he's meeting with that war criminal right now, by the way.
In Ukraine.
In the Oval Office.
But is there a limit? There is. Because our Constitution says no one is above the law. And that limit is that one cannot, even as president, use the public trust of high office for personal gain.
So they say.
The law prohibits any one of us here on the dais from seeking foreign assistance in our campaigns.
The law prohibits that, yes.
The question for us is whether the use of power by the president was for the benefit of advancing his political interest in the 2020 campaign. And by the way,
what do you
my
think?
Colleagues, if the president wants to attack Joe Biden and his son, he's free to do it,
mm-hmm.
all fair and square in campaigns. He's just not free to change our foreign policy unless he gets his way to assist him in that campaign.
Hello.
That's a line he can't cross.
You think? Well, but he does now, every fucking day.
You all have been very clear about what our continuous foreign policy was. And Ambassador Taylor, just very quickly, describe why us withholding aid interfered with achieving our national security goals.
Good question.
Mr. Welch, one of our national security goals is to resolve conflicts in Europe. There is one major conflict in Europe. It's a fighting war. Our national security goals in support of Ukraine, in support of a broader strategic approach to Europe, is to facilitate that negotiation, is to try to support right. Ukraine when it negotiates with the Russians.
Right. And I want to go back, because in the historical context, Mr. Kent, that you and Ambassador Taylor provided, we had 70 years of peace after the war in which we lost over 400,000 American lives. And that took care. And that was in jeopardy, as you described it, Ambassador Taylor. And that threatened each and every one of us up here in the constituents we represent. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
Yep.
I want to do three dates, too. I only have a little time. But July 24, July 25, and July 26. July 24th, Director Mueller testified about his investigation, and he established beyond doubt that it was the Russians who interfered in our election.
Mm-hmm.
And he expressed a fear that that would be the new normal. On July 25th, according to the readout of the president's campaign, he asked the Ukrainians to investigate Ukrainian interference in our election that had been repudiated. And then on July 26th, as I understand it, this person who reported to you heard the president saying he wanted investigations again in Ukraine. So this is the question. The new normal that Director Mueller feared,
mm-hmm.
is there a new normal that you fear that a president, any president, can use congressionally approved foreign aid as a lever to get personal advantage in something that is in his interest, but not the public interest?
That should not be the case, Mr. Welch.
I yield back.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record the transcript from the July 25th call between President Trump and President Zelensky. You yourself, Mr. Chairman, have mischaracterized the call. In fact, in the first open hearing, you had a parody.
Shut her up. C-SPAN keeps doing this. Are you still there? Yes, I'm still here. Stop cutting off my feed. It did this. We've been going for hours now, and it keeps cutting off my feed. Damn it. Now it says authentication in progress. And we're missing Adam Schiff, taking this woman to task as she deserves. Come on. Come back up. Come on. Come on. All right, we're listening to the stream.
Sir,
here we go.
The height of the Vietnam War.
All right, this
that,
is Sean Patrick Maloney now questioning for the Democrats.
The height was about that time.
What was your class rank at West Point?
I was number 5.
How many people were you in your class?
Number 5 at West Point out of 800.
800
wow.
Cadets, you were number 5.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
So when you're top 1% of your class at West Point, you probably get your pick of assignments, but you picked the infantry.
I did,
you,
sir. Yes, sir.
You're a rifle company commander?
Sir.
Where'd you serve?
In Vietnam.
Did you see combat in Vietnam, sir?
I did.
Did you earn any accommodations for that service?
All right, these are ridiculous questions. I'm
sorry. The combat infantryman's badge, which is
we know he's a patriot. Okay.
My highest, I'm proudest of. There was a Bronze Star. There was an Air Medal with V.
That's for valor, isn't it, sir?
It is.
Let's talk about
okay.
July 26th, a lot of years later. You go to the front, you go to Donbass with Ambassador Volker, I believe, and you're on the bridge, and you're looking over on the front line at the Russian soldiers. Is that what you recalled?
Yes, sir.
And you said the commander there, the Ukrainian commander, thanked you for the American military assistance that you knew was being withheld at that moment.
That's correct.
How'd that make you feel, sir?
Badly.
Why?
Because it was clear that that commander counted on us. It was clear that that commander had confidence in us.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear that that commander had was appreciative of the capabilities that he was given by that assistance, but also the reassurance that we were supporting him.
You don't strike me as a quitter, Ambassador, but you threatened to resign, or you mentioned it in your statement. Before I ask you about that, let's just talk about a couple days later, on on August 28th. You find yourself in Ukraine with the National Security Advisor, Mr. Bolton, right?
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh.
And you convey to him your concerns. You've testified to this previously about the withholding of military assistance. What does he say to you?
He says that he shares my concern, and he advises me to express that in a very special way to the Secretary of State.
Now, he's the National Security Advisor, works directly with the President, but he tells you that you should bring it up with the Secretary of State.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever sent a cable like that? How many times in your career, 40, 50 years, have you sent a cable directly to the Secretary of State?
Once.
Wow.
This time?
Wow.
Yes, sir.
In
wow.
50 years?
In 50 years.
Rifle company commanders don't send cables, but yes, sir.
So the National Security Advisor, who could tell it to the President himself and who shares your concern, says you, the ambassador serving in Ukraine, should cable the Secretary of State directly, and you do so, don't you?
Yes, sir.
What'd the cable say, sir?
It's classified cable.
Without going into classified information.
Without going into classified, it says security assistance. It's what we've been talking about today. Security assistance to Ukraine at this particular time, as in previous time, is very important. Ukraine, I also make the point that we've also talked about here today, Ukraine is important for our national security, and we should support it.
So
not to provide that would be folly.
Did you get an answer to your cable?
Not directly. No, sir.
Do you know what happened to it?
Secretary Kent.
Secretary Kent, do you know what happened to it?
Tells me that.
Yeah, I was on vacation when his cable came in, but my understanding is it made it to its recipient, intended recipient, Secretary Pompeo.
And we know Secretary Pompeo was on the call a month earlier on July 25th. It's not like he's in the dark about any of this. What did he do with it?
I honestly can't say for sure what happened with the cable once the message was brought in at the highest level.
One other question, wow. Gentlemen. On September 1st,
it went in the circular filing
the Vice
cabinet.
President and the President of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky, in which, right off the bat, the President of Ukraine raises security assistance. And the Vice President, according to your telling, says, I'll talk to the President tonight about that. I'll make a call. Do you know whether the Vice President made that call?
I don't know, sir.
Do you know what, if anything, the Vice President had to do with any of this? What more can you tell us about the Vice President's role in this? Do you know if he ever raised this issue with anyone in the administration, whether he ever pushed for the release of that security assistance?
I can't, sir.
I believe to the best of my understanding, the Vice President was an advocate for the release of the assistance.
Vice President was an advocate for the release of the assistance.
Mr. Chairman, I have unanimous consent request. General State's request. I ask unanimous consent to submit for the record the Politico article on Ukraine boosting the Clinton campaign, authored by Ken Vogel, now at the New York Times.
That will be entered into the record.
Thank you.
Representative Demings.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to both of you for being with us today. Mr. Kent, you said that a president has the right to remove an ambassador because the ambassador serves at the pleasure of the president. Is that correct?
That is correct, ma'am.
Does that removal usually come with the smear campaign of that ambassador by the president?
Good question.
I think the right of the president to make a decision about the president's personal representative, as confirmed by the Senate, is separate from whatever happens outside the confines of U.S. government processes.
Do you have any idea why it was important to discredit Ambassador
These are all
Yovanovitch,
Democrats right now asking these questions. They must have run out of Republicans,
important?
Finally.
Well, I guess it probably depends on the motivation of other people, and I am not one of them.
The committee's investigation has uncovered a web of shadow diplomacy engaged in and executed by several State Department officials and the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and ultimately directed by President Trump. We have heard several ways of describing this shady shadow operation, shadow diplomacy, rogue back channel. Ambassador Taylor, you have described what you encountered as the top diplomat on the ground in Ukraine as a, and I quote, highly irregular, informal channel of U.S. policymaking. You testified that the channel included Ambassador Volker, Sondland, Secretary Perry, and as you later learned, the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Both of you have explained that you grew seriously concerned when you realized that the interests of this irregular channel diverged from official U.S. policy and interests. Was Mr. Giuliani promoting U.S. national interests or policy in Ukraine, Ambassador?
I don't think so, ma'am.
Mr. Kent?
No, he was not.
What interests do you believe he was promoting, Mr. Kent?
I believe he was looking to dig up political dirt against a potential rival in the next election cycle.
Of course
Ambassador
they were.
Taylor, what interests do you believe he was promoting?
I agree with Mr. Kent.
Ooh.
The State Department's role is to promote U.S. policies overseas, not to help the current president win re-election. Is that correct, Mr. Kent?
All federal government employees are subject to the Hatch Act, and our actions are supposed to be promoting policy and not involved in partisan politics.
Ambassador Hello. Taylor?
I agree.
Hello.
What is the risk of running a separate channel of diplomacy that is completely outside of normal channels and does not further U.S. policy goals, Ambassador Taylor?
Ms. Demings, it's possible to do one but not the other. That is, if it's completely against U.S. policy goals, then that's a mistake. Then it's not helpful. What you can get advice and even have conversations outside of the normal channels, but then they need to be part of U.S. foreign policy and approaching those goals.
Mr. Kent?
Agree.
Ambassador Taylor, you have described in your previous testimony one instance shortly after you arrived in Ukraine in which Ambassador Sondland asked State Department officials not to listen to a July 28th call he had planned to hold with President Zelensky. Did you find that unusual?
I did.
What was the impact of Ambassador Sondland making that request? And you found it unusual. What do you believe the impact was?
Ms. Demings, I'm not sure there was an immediate impact.
Was there a recording or a transcription?
There was not. That was the impact. It was not recorded.
Do you think that's why the request was made, so there would not be normal State Department employees from the Operations Center would have been there transcribing and taking notes?
That is the norm, but it is also it is not unusual to not have it recorded.
So you know that the State Department is holding your notes and refuses to provide them to Congress despite a duly authorized subpoena. And we know that in some instances your notes may be the only documentary record of what happened. You are aware of that,
yes.
Correct? And Mr. Kent, you are aware that your notes have not been turned over to Congress.
I have turned all records that I had in my possession to the State Department because whatever we do is considered a federal record, not a personal record.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Mr. Chairman, I have a unanimous consent request.
General Estates request.
I have a New York Times op-ed stating why President Obama should have done more in investing in Ukraine by a trio of ambassadors, which includes William Taylor.
Without objection, that will be admitted into the record. Mr. Krishnamurthy.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'd like to walk you through a couple points raised by my colleagues on the other side. One is they claim that the July 25th call summary shows no evidence of pressure on the Ukrainian government. In fact, they argue the Ukrainians did not feel any pressure at any time to comply with any of President Trump's requests for investigations. In fact, Ambassador Taylor, at your deposition in October, you stated that due to the hold that President Trump placed on aid to the Ukraine, the Ukrainians became, quote-unquote, desperate. Isn't that right?
Yes.
In August, they did not know, as far as I'm aware, but at the end of August, the article came out in September. The Minister of Defense, for example, came to me I would use the word desperate to figure out why the assistance was being held. He thought that perhaps if he went to Washington to talk to you, to talk to the Secretary of Defense, to talk to the President, he would be able to find out and reassure, provide whatever answer was necessary to have that assistance released.
In fact, my colleagues on the other side suggest that President Zelensky personally did not feel any pressure at any time. And yet, later on in September, he finally relented in a conversation with Gordon Sondland, according to your deposition, in which he agreed to make a statement on CNN. Isn't that right?
He had planned to make a statement on CNN, yes, sir.
My colleagues also say that the hold on U.S. security assistance was lifted on September 11th without any investigations happening on the part of the Ukrainians, and therefore everything ended up fine in the end. However, Mr. Kent, as you know, the House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight Committees began this current investigation leading to the proceedings today on September 9th. In fact, it was only 2 days after this particular set of committees began their investigations that the Trump administration eventually released the military aid, correct?
That is a timeline, yes.
Mr. Ambassador Taylor, between the time of your October deposition and now, did anyone from the Trump administration contact you about your appearance before the committee today?
Oh, yes.
No, sir.
Oh, really?
How about you, Mr. Kent?
Surprising.
No, sir.
Ambassador Taylor, I would like to turn to a word that, by my count, you used 13 times in your opening statement, and that word is concern. You were concerned that aid was being conditioned on political investigations, isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
You were concerned that irregular channels of diplomacy were being used in our foreign policy in the Ukraine, right?
Yes, sir.
Ambassador Taylor, can you rule out the possibility that these irregular channels of diplomacy are being used in other countries?
No.
Where we conduct foreign policy?
Can you rule it out?
I can't.
No, you can't.
I've not heard of any other separate channel that has this kind of influence.
Well, that's good to know.
The Giuliani kind of guidance.
But you can't rule it out, right?
No, sir.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Mr. Kent? You can't rule it out either, right?
I have no basis to make a determination.
You don't believe the July 25th call was perfect, did you? Do you?
Come on.
I think some of the language in the call gave cause for concern.
Ambassador Taylor?
I agree.
And what was the cause for concern for you?
There was part of the cause, yeah. The discussion of the previous ambassador was a cause for concern.
Ambassador Taylor, I want to draw on your experience finally as a West Point cadet and as an infantry commander in Vietnam. In a battlefield situation, is a commanding officer allowed to hold up action, placing his troops at risk until someone provides him a personal benefit?
No, sir.
Is that because if commanding officers did that, they would be betraying their responsibility to the nation and the men and women
yes.
under their command?
The answer yes, is yes.
And if that happened and were found out, could that person be subject to discipline?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Could that type of conduct trigger a court-martial?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I yield back.
That was pretty good Mr. questioning Chairman. From Krishnamurthy.
Thank the gentleman.
Mr. Chairman, let's have unanimous.
What purpose does the gentleman see?
I thank the chairman. I have unanimous consent. Ask unanimous consent to enter into the record Mr. Mulvaney's statement where he said there is absolutely no quid pro quo from October 17, 2019.
Gymnasium Jordan is entering irrelevant stuff into the record.
Mr. Chairman. I've recognized Mr. Nunes for his comments. Ms. Conway, we will get your motion.
Okay.
After Mr. Nunes' brief closing remarks and my brief closing remarks,
we're getting close
my
to
intention
the end.
To excuse the witnesses. We'll have a very brief recess. Members should not go far. We will resume and take up Mr. Conaway's motion. Mr. Nunes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just be brief. Okay. I want to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is that we really should stop holding these hearings until we get
shut
the
up.
Answer
we
to
should stop
three
holding these hearings
topics.
As long as you're sitting in
the first
vice
the
chair
extent
seat.
Of the Democrats' prior coordination
fucking moron.
With the whistleblower, and who did the whistleblower coordinate with? Second, the full extent of Ukraine's election meddling against the Trump campaign.
That's the cow mooing.
Why
just in case you were wondering what that was.
Hunter Biden, and what did he do for
Hunter
them?
Biden has nothing to do with this. Stop
actions,
it.
U.S. government actions under the Obama administration. You are not allowing those witnesses to...
Because they're irrelevant.
...appear before the committee, which I think
as
is
his right,
so we'll expect,
as chair.
You will...
That's what happens when you're in the majority.
The folks that he spoke to, and also... numerous Democratic operatives who worked with Ukraine to meddle in the election. And that I'll yield back.
Good. Wow, he kept it short. Thank you.
I thank the gentleman. I want to thank the witnesses for their testimony today, for your decades of service to the country. I think you exemplify so many courageous men and women who serve in the diplomatic corps, who served in our military, who represent the United States so well around the world. I appreciate how you endeavored to stay out of the fray, to relate what you heard, what you saw, without additional commentary. That is as it should be. You were both compelled to appear, and we are grateful that you answered the lawful subpoenas that you received. The story that you have shared with us today and your experiences, I think, is a very deeply troubling one.
Yes, it is.
It is the story of a dedicated ambassador, someone who served with great distinction, Ambassador Yovanovitch, who was the subject of a vicious smear campaign at the beginning of the year.
And she's testifying Friday.
It is the story of once this ambassador was pushed out of the way, the creation of an irregular channel, which, Ambassador Taylor, you described, went all the way from the president through Mick Mulvaney, through Ambassador Sondland, through Ambassador Volker, to Rudy Giuliani. That,
boy, talk about a
motley
crew,
over time,
huh?
Became apparent, was not serving the U.S. interest, but running deeply contrary to the U.S. interest, was, in fact, conditioning a White House meeting that the president of Ukraine desperately sought to establish himself as the new president of Ukraine and to demonstrate to friend and foe alike that he had a relationship with his most powerful patron, the United States of America, and conditioned $400 million of bipartisan taxpayer-funded military support for a nation at war on the front lines of Russian expansionism.
Yep.
A suspension of which was not in the U.S. interest, not in Ukraine's interest, not in our national security interest in no way, shape, or form. You've described a situation in which those in the service of the president made it clear to the Ukrainians they need to publicly announce these investigations or they weren't going to get that meeting and they sure weren't going to get that military assistance. Now, I would point out, and this may not have come to your attention, but it certainly came to our attention. On September 9th, the Inspector General informed our committee that the Director of National Intelligence was withholding a whistleblower complaint in violation of the statute. By that point, on September 9th, that complaint had made its way to the White House. On September 9th, when the Inspector General informed Congress that that complaint had been withheld, the White House also learned that Congress now inevitably would learn about the complaint. It was less than 48 hours later that the military aid would be released.
Huh. Wonder how that happened.
Over the weeks to come, or over the days to come, rather, we will hear from other dedicated public servants about other aspects of this effort to invite foreign interference in our election, to condition a White House meeting and military aid for the performance of political favors for the president's reelection campaign. We will hear from other witnesses. I appreciate members on both sides of the aisle who I think participated today in a serious way and in a civil way. This is as it should be.
Well,
there is no
some
shortage
of them were
of
civil.
Strong feelings about what this means to the country. At the end of the day, we're going to have to decide, based on the evidence that you and others provide,
whether we're prepared to accept in the presence of the United States a situation where the president, for their own personal or political benefit, can condition military aid, diplomatic meetings, or any other performance of an official act in order to get help in their reelection. Whether we will need to accept in this president or any future president the idea that the president of the United States can invite a foreign country to intervene in our affairs. These are the decisions we will have to make when we have to decide whether this president should be impeached.
Of course he should be impeached.
But I want to thank you again. Just conclude by saying, because I can't let it go unanswered, several of my colleagues made the statement repeatedly that I have met with the whistleblower, that I know who the whistleblower is. It was false the first time they said it. It was false the second through 40th time they said it. It will be false the last time they say it. With that, this concludes this portion of the hearing. I want to thank you, gentlemen. I ask everyone to remain in their seats. The witnesses are excused. Please allow them to leave the committee room. We will, once they leave the committee room, take a brief recess, and then we will resume to take up Mr. Conaway's motion. And
all
once
right.
again, I thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you. And with that, the first day of the impeachment, public impeachment hearings into Donald Trump, are history. Oh, that was exhausting. I don't know about you, but yes, I've been sitting here watching it since they began at 10 o'clock this morning. For those of you listening on the Progressive Voices Network, where this program airs at 5 p.m. Eastern, you're wondering, wait, this happened already. Yes, because this program is still live at 3 Eastern. I turn it around quickly and upload it so it can air on Progressive Voices at 5. We are working feverishly towards moving the live show to 5, so this won't happen again. But if there's testimony still going on at 5, of course I would carry it live because there is no other choice at this moment. So this is where we are today. The first day of testimony is gone, is in the history books, and it is in the history books for sure. I don't know if it meets what the hype that they built it up to be, right? Because everything they were saying was that, oh, we know we need to grab the audience in the first hour, and this is going to be explosive testimony right out of the box, and it's going to be compelling, and people are going to get it, even if they only watch the first hour. Not so much. I mean, look, you got, for people like you and me, yes, informative, exhausting, but informative. But there was also, you know, there are people like, I forget her, Stephanie Grisham, I think is her name, the person who holds the position of White House press secretary, who gets paid almost $200,000 a year. I can't tell what she does, except, you know, put out a tweet today that says the hearings were boring. Now, I can come up with a lot of other words for it. Boring would not be the word I use to describe a hearing concerning the President of the United States holding up military aid for an ally that had already been allocated by Congress on the condition of that ally doing personal political research, spin, manufacturing evidence on a political opponent of the president. That's not boring. It is the opposite of the definition of boring. Anyway, I've got some, as I mentioned in the chat room while that was going on, what I thought at some point they would break for lunch, in which case I could cut up the audio from the first hour, because, you know, I do all this myself. I work alone. And they only took what was supposed to be a 5-minute break, and it turned out to be closer to 10, but still not really enough time to get a whole lot of audio cut up. I do have a couple of things that I'll share with you in just a moment, but I'll tell you what, while I'm doing this, we could all use a laugh right now, right? Right. Thank you. So I thought we would take a quick time out. We'll take our break here for today's funny. And then we'll come back. I'll open up the phones. Should you care to weigh in on what we just heard? The number's 954 889-6410, or you can Skype to Nicole Sandler. Once again, be forewarned, I work without a producer. I don't have a phone screener. I take calls as they come in, unscreened. So, you know, if you call in, just hold on. You'll hear me pick up. If I pick up, you're on the air. And if it keeps ringing, just call back when that person hangs up and, you know, try to be the next caller in. So all those things going on. Phone lines are open. We'll have a couple of clips to play for you. And before we go any further, let's laugh. This from last night's Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Impeachment hearings on the eve of these historic public impeachment hearings.
Impeachment hearing eve.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With Republicans screaming and Democrats dreaming, impeachment is near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
It's the impeachiest season of all. Getting dirt from the Ukraine to help your next campaign will be your downfall. It's the impeachiest season of all. There'll be transcripts for reading. The president's tweeting that this whole thing is a hoax.
Hoax.
There'll be Nunes and Jordan ignoring extortion, executive privilege, and votes. It's the most wonderful time, yes, the most wonderful time for the most obvious crime you'll ever hear.
Thank you, Stephen Colbert. The most impeachiest time of the year. All right. Again, phone lines are open, 954-889-6410, or Skype in to Nicole Sandler. So what do you think? Did the Democrats do what they set out to do? Did they make a case in this first day of the hearings? Was this more compelling than the Mueller testimony? I think there's no question there. There was one moment, the one moment early on in the hearing today that made headlines. And let me hold on. I pulled notes for this and everything, and I've got audio to share with you. So what happened was, oh, I'm pulling up the wrong page here. All right. So Bill Taylor, that's the ambassador. He's the guy who, again, when he testified in his deposition, members came out of the skiff saying, I've never been so disturbed by what I heard in Congress as I am today with what this ambassador just told us. Again, Bill Taylor, he's the one who Mike Pompeo recruited to replace Masha Yovanovitch after Trump, you know, smeared her and removed her from the post. And it was because she was raising concern. So anyway, what happened during his testimony, Taylor revealed one of his aides, something that he didn't know when he gave his deposition just a few weeks ago. So he revealed that one of his aides had overheard a conversation between Donald Trump and Gordon Sondland. He's the ambassador to the EU, who honestly should have nothing to do with Ukraine. Ukraine is not part of the European Union. Gordon Sondland, again, he is the donor. He's a hotel guy who donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee to buy his ambassadorship. Again, it happens all the time. It happens with Democrats and it happens with Republicans. The fact that Democrats do it too certainly does not make it right. I think it's a heinous practice. I don't think anybody should be able to buy an ambassadorship. But that's how Gordon Sondland did it. So once again, he is not a never-Trumper. He bought the seat for $1 million. And now he is one of the three amigos that they kept talking about. It was Sondland, it was Kurt Volker, and it was Rick Perry. And I'm sorry, Rick Perry has no expertise in anything, let alone energy. The fact that he is the Secretary of Energy is as ridiculous as Gordon Sondland being the ambassador to the European Union because he was able to pay $1 million for the honor. So anyway, during his testimony this morning, Taylor revealed that one of his aides had overheard this conversation between Trump and Gordon Sondland, in which the president pressed Sondland to get Ukraine on board with, quote, the investigation, meaning into Vice President Joe Biden and his son, or former Vice President Joe Biden. Anyway, this conversation occurred on July 26th, one day after Trump's infamous phone call with the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, in which he repeatedly pressed for the Ukrainian government to launch an investigation of the company that had formerly employed Biden's son. So this new revelation caught many of the national security experts and reporters off guard. Many of them described it as devastating. In fact, during the 5-minute break, I went to the Washington Post and the New York Times to see what they were pulling out of the first part of the hearing. And that was the story. So here is the segment. It's only a little over a minute, in which Ambassador Bill Taylor dropped this new bombshell.
Last Friday, a member of my staff told me of events that occurred on July 26th. While Ambassador Volker and I visited the front, this member of my staff accompanied Ambassador Sondland. Ambassador Sondland met with Mr. Yermak.
Okay.
Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv.
Okay.
The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. At the time I gave my deposition on October 22nd, I was not aware of this information. I'm including it here for completeness. As the committee knows, I reported this information through counsel to the State Department's legal advisor, as well as to counsel for both the majority and the minority of this committee. It is my understanding that the committee is following up on this matter.
Ah, so that is pretty devastating. And then, thanks to Twitter, I learned this from Josh Lederman at NBC News, who tweeted shortly after that testimony, quote, just in, a source familiar with the matter tells NBC News that the Taylor staffer who overheard Sondland's call with Trump is David Holmes, who was just added to the calendar to testify in a closed session on Friday. So that happened. In between all of this, while all this stuff is going on, Donald Trump has been hanging out with Erdogan. And hold on, I don't have it open, but I'm going to pull up a window. And sure enough, I pull up MSNBC just to see if they have any, because they're supposed to be doing a press conference, like they were supposed to do it about a half hour ago. Honestly, I have no idea if anything happened with that, because I don't have a producer. And obviously, we were, preoccupied with the impeachment hearing. But the headline, if you go to MSNBC.com, Bill Taylor's bombshell testimony draws direct line to Trump. And that's what we just heard. So this is the guy, David Holmes. Let me write that down because I know I'm going to need that name again. I guess is going to be testifying on Friday, which makes sense because let's see. There's no testimony tomorrow, right? And then on Friday, I'm all confused. On Friday, I believe, you know what? We should do What's News because I have the entire schedule inside What's News. You know what? Let's do that so I can bring you up to date on what's happening. We'll do the recorded version. Yeah, you know what? I'll just do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live. Damn it. We'll just do it live. Okay.
I read the news today.
Oh, boy. All right, so here's the deal. Friday, testimony begins at 9 a.m. Thank you, Chris Dierks. So I guess they're going to do the testimony with Maria Yovanovitch starting at 9 in the morning. It's only one witness Monday, so maybe they'll get David Holmes in the closed session in the afternoon. Anyway, here we are today. It's November 13th, 2019. Write it down. It's a date that will be remembered for the start of the public hearings in the Donald Trump impeachment inquiry. That deserved a ding. Two witnesses, as you just heard, were scheduled for today. William Taylor, the top diplomat in Ukraine, who was recruited by Mike Pompeo to replace the ousted Marie Yovanovitch. He told lawmakers that Trump's pressure campaign had, quote, fundamentally undermined U.S. interests in the region. The other witness today was George Kent, deputy assistant secretary in the European and Eurasian Bureau at the State Department. He testified in his original deposition that Trump's allies were conducting a shadow foreign policy that threatened U.S. interests and empowered Russia. He was particularly critical of Rudy Giuliani, go figure, Trump's personal attorney, who orchestrated Yovanovitch's removal. And again, as I mentioned before, Yovanovitch, the ousted former ambassador to Ukraine, she will testify in a public hearing Friday morning, 9 a.m. Okay, now someone, Elisa in the chat room, just said, will Alex Vindman be scheduled? Funny you should ask. They just announced yesterday afternoon the lineup, eight more witnesses who will testify next week. Next week, they'll have testimony Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. On Tuesday, it's going to be a full house. Tuesday, November 19th, it'll be Jennifer Williams. She's a special advisor to Vice President Pence on Europe and Russia. The guy you asked about, Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, the former National Security Director for European Affairs. And you heard Trump fired him the other day after he gave his testimony. Trump fired him. That should be illegal. But, you know, what do I know? So Vindman will be there on Tuesday, as will Kurt Volker, the former special envoy to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, a former White House national security advisor. So those one, Williams, Vindman, Volker, and Morrison will all testify on Tuesday. Tuesday's going to be a busy day. We may have, you know, I have a feeling the testimony is going to go on. Maybe we'll just, you know, we'll have Laffy on that day to do as we did today, and we'll just listen and snark on some of the comments, I guess. Because if it's on, if the hearing's happening while the show is on, we're going to carry it. That's just how we will operate for the next couple of weeks. So that's Tuesday. On Wednesday, November 20th, Gordon Sondland, yes, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, he will testify along with Laura Cooper, the Pentagon official who oversees Ukraine policy. Oh, and David Hale, the State Department's third-ranking official. That was the guy. That's the name I just wrote down, isn't it? Hold on. I'm scrolling down. David Holmes. Oh, it's a different date. See, that's why I wrote down the name, because you see how I did that? So not David Holmes, David Hale, a different David H. All right. So there you go. So David Holmes, I guess, is going to testify behind closed doors Friday, and we may yet see him in a public hearing as well. And then on Thursday, only one witness, but it's going to be a big one, Fiona Hill, who we've heard her name invoked in a number of questions and answers. The former top Russia advisor to the White House, Fiona Hill, will testify next Thursday. My week is sort of on hold. I've got people that I know I want to have on to talk about everything that's going on, but I don't want to schedule them while the hearing is happening, because we're going to listen to the hearings if they're going on. On Friday, by the time we hit the air live at 3 Eastern, the hearing should be over, because it's only, again, Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, who will be testifying on Friday, and they're starting at 9 a.m. as opposed to 10. So it should end. It should be over by the time we're on the air. We will have a panel on Friday. You know, I don't usually do panels, and it's not really a panel. It's two of our semi-regular guests who haven't been here in a while just because things have been so busy. But Dave Johnson, my pal Dave Johnson, who, you know, is one of those Johnsons who's always right. Oops, correct. And Gaius Publius, who now these days is going by his real name. He's owning up to all his writing, Thomas Neuberger. But he's still, you know, on Twitter as Gaius Publius. They will both be here on Friday. So we will have a discussion of all this. But this is shaping up to be good. And yesterday, you know, I don't want to play that. And this is too long. All right. See, I didn't have a chance to edit stuff. So let me share this with you. So the Republicans, their strategy for fighting this impeachment, they laid out in an 18-page memo yesterday to guide the members on their defense of Trump. Of course, the memo leaked out. And the gist of their argument comes down to 4 points. The first is the July 25th call summary shows no conditionality or evidence of pressure. Okay, first of all, it was in the testimony too. I'm going to pull this thing. It was, I believe, in the testimony with Jim Himes, who actually did a good job of questioning. Let me see if I can't find it. You know what? I took notes all along. I'm going to be editing a lot of audio tonight to share with you tomorrow. So we'll have highlights tomorrow, I promise. But the thing is, the fact that Zelensky didn't admit that he felt pressured doesn't mean shit. What's he going to do? Say, yeah, I felt pressured and diss the president? Not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Actually, I think... I think Adam Schiff commented on that. Anyway, I'll go through my notes and I'll find the clip for tomorrow. So that it shows no conditionality or evidence of pressure. First of all, I say that's not true because I need you to do us a favor, though, is conditionality and it is pressure. It's all in, you know, the degree to which the pressure was exerted. The second point, Ukrainian President Zelensky and Donald Trump have both said there was no pressure on the call. Again, Trump's going to lie. And what's Zelensky going to say? Yeah, he pressured me? That would shoot himself in the foot. He's not going to say, yeah, he pressured me, even if he felt incredibly pressured. Duh. The third point, the Ukrainian government was not aware of the hold on U.S. assistance during the July 25th call. Maybe so, but I'll tell you what they knew as of that July 25th call was that they didn't get the money yet. They were trying to get the money released. They may not have known there was an official hold on it, but they certainly knew they hadn't gotten it yet, and they wanted to make it happen. Hello. And then the final one was... hold on. I just lost my place. Oh, the security assistance hold was lifted on September 11th. Yeah, after we already knew that they were holding it up, after we already found out that they were trying to extort the president of Ukraine. Why is that so hard? Actually, it isn't. It isn't difficult at all. Just saying. All right, we're coming to the end of the show. I'm going to end with a little ditty from our friend, if I can find where I put it. Where did I put it? Come on. Was it in this one? Boca in use. Ah, I found it. A new ditty from our friend, Boca Brittany Summers. Take it away, Britt.
The new javelins have finally arrived.
Oops. I got the music going. All right, we'll do it over again. All right. Once again, take it away, Boca Brittany Summers.
The new javelins have finally arrived at Zelensky AMC. It took some doing, but fabricated dirt against a Trump opponent really paid off. With new javelins we've been waiting for, and a wide variety of Gremlins, Hornets, and Pacers. Only at Zelensky AMC. Right now, lease a Javelin AMX for just $199 a month. And get 0.9% APR financing on the Go Package-equipped Javelin SST with no payments for 90 days. Check out our $39 million inventory of javelins and drive one home today from Zelensky AMC.
And on that note, we're done for the day. Thank you, Britt, for the humor. Tomorrow, it's Thursday. Tomorrow's Thursday already. Howie Klein will be here. And again, I'll have highlights of today's testimony for you. in an extended What's News. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for bearing with me while we listened to and watched what was left of the hearing. Because after all, we're living history, and there's nothing more important right now than removing that criminal from the White House. All right, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.